Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Jumping just straight into the slingshot of it. Tonight, we're talking Tony Todd, the one, the only actor. With me is the action elite, Jonathan Mark.
What's up, everybody?
The sky. We got Nathaniel Johnson of At the Devil's Door. How are you?
At the Devil's Ball, yeah. Good. It's good to meet you guys. Ball.
Yeah. Denny Bennett from Legion Podcast Network.
Hey, it's good to be here. Good to talk about some fantastic blue-collar actorship.
Yes, we're doing everybody. Michael Madsen and Lance Henriksen. We've already done plenty of the Hammer horror guys. And I'm telling you, when we did John Carradine, we were just doing endless impressions of everybody.
Yeah.
William Shatner episode was great. Lou Diamond Phillips was kind of the one that got us back on the acting bandwagon. We had done one. The one that started it all was Bruce Campbell. We were just like, okay. Top 10 roles. And then after a while, we were just like, yeah, fuck it. I'm tired of keeping track. So let's just name as many other roles that are just worth seeing.
Nice.
And if you want to be campy, if you want to say, hey, it's a bad movie, but you should totally see it, that's fine too. Oh, so Tony Todd, where the hell do you know him? You know him as the chilling voodoo-esque folklore villain in the Candyman franchise and its reboot. You probably know him also as traitorous mercenary leader Captain Darrow in The Rock. You've seen him in countless other recurring movie and TV roles, including Worf's brother Kern in the Star Trek Next Generations franchise. You've seen him as General Juma, the South African terrorist on 24, and plenty of other recurring and giant movie appearances, including the Final Destination franchise, Stargate SG-1, Platoon, and how can we possibly forget Homicide: Life on the Street? So, with further ado, why... everyone does Tony rock. I'll let Nathaniel go first.
Tony, I mean, obviously the thing about probably the thing the most to know about Tony Todd, of course, is that that voice of his it's definitely the thing that's the that's the most famous about him. In fact, to the point now that he's been doing a lot of voice acting roles. Most recently, I was so excited to see him as the voice of Darkseid on some of the more recent animated DC Comics movies.
Yeah, he did that role in quite a lot of, not only just the cartoons, but like even like online, like DC Online or some shit like that. So
I think his next project is actually he's voicing Venom in the next Spider-Man video game or something to that effect.
So he's done
all that stuff. But to me, I mean, obviously I run a horror podcast, and so we're the most familiar with him over there from not only Candyman, but also for his wonderful turn in the remake of Night of the Living Dead, where he played.
Yeah, shame on me. I knew I was forgetting something.
Yeah, and he took over the role from Dwayne Jones, who played him for George Romero. And it was probably the first time I had seen him in anything was then, in like 91, 92, when I was, like 12 or 13. And I saw that Night of the Living Dead, and just, he was so good in that, I became a lifelong fan. So
did you hear Court on Cinema Psyops episode when he covered that movie? He had some great theories about it that I was like, man, everyone should revisit this more and more and see if they get that impression from that rewatch. But he talked about how he met Tony Todd at a convention, and he went balls out. He's like, I not only love this more than the original, but you are the best impression of Ben. And he was like, no, don't ever say that. Oh, Dwayne Jones. Oh, inspiration to us all. He was very humble.
I would think too, actually, to talk to Tony Todd about Dwayne Jones. I mean, Dwayne Jones, of course, obviously was such a huge trailblazer in terms of a black actor taking on a lead role at a time when that wasn't really accepted, that Tony Todd would only be a fanboy of Dwayne Jones. And
he how he got it, actually. He mentioned on the Masters of Horror, that's a different awesome Showtime show, but that show Eli Roth hosted on AMC and Shudder.
History of Horror.
Of Horror. I don't know if you heard the interview, but it was cool how he's like, I got that from my Platoon and Criminal Justice co-star, Forrest Whitaker. You know, we had just done Platoon, stayed in touch, did an HBO movie called Criminal Justice, and Whitaker's like, hey, I'm telling you, all of these agents and all these other people, I'm telling you, this remake may not be a critical darling, but it is heating up. It's going to get you some roles. You got to take this now.
Yeah.
It's like, man, I wish more people talk about that. Instead, everyone wants to talk about, you know, Tom Savini, you know, disowning it. I'm just like, I don't give a fuck about that. It's a great movie. So I want to know about the making of, the makeup, and more details of the scenes. I just found the work print off of archive.org. I'm like, I'm going to have to watch that. And there's apparently just like different gore inserts.
So. Yeah, Savini's come around on it lately.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think there's actually a new version coming out sometime soon, the version you've ever seen.
I'll buy it again.
But he's wrote a book recently, Savini, about his whole career, and I think that he revisited it for the first time after a long, long time of not really bothering with it, and is much more proud of it now than he was.
The ego stroke after a while. It's like you need after the 50th time where they got in FAMO for it, they finally got to embrace it. But it just sucks that it's gotta go through that process. It's like, come on, dude, be proud of your work, even if the producer was a cock or just you hated working on it. If you got a good product, you know, it's
but I mean, it's such a good turn for Tony Todd, and it was the probably the role that turned things around for him in terms of getting him a lot more work. So,
Babylon 5 connection there, Patricia Tallman.
Patricia Tallman.
She's the lead on there, and he's later in one of their best TV movies as a general who has to sacrifice himself. Like, we're talking to a kamikaze run.
I'm not familiar with that. But I've seen, we did the Candyman trilogy not too long ago on At the Devil's Ball. And that was
our favorite last
year. And we were pretty hard on the sequels, part 2 and 3, but we never had anything negative to say about Tony Todd whatsoever. Like, he just owned the role.
Yeah, part 2 kind of did the whole, let's just do an origin thing, and it was just like it or hate it for everyone. But yeah, part 3, I know he's not happy of, like, apparently someone said on an IMDb blurb that at some convention around circa 2013, he was doing a panel, and he's like, yeah, next question.
And that doesn't surprise me. But I mean,
which is a shame because he was like executive producer. So I think he had like extra time to conceive the story, or I don't know, just more range on the acting. So I think it's watchable as a standalone X-Files episode, but the character does just show up out of nowhere to where you're like, what does this have to do with anything?
More or less, yeah. It's an awkward movie, but he's great in, he's still great in it. I mean, he's always good, and he's done a lot of low budget horror pictures over his career as well.
Always. A lot of them, everyone signs him up.
Yeah, and he's not. They're not. a lot of them aren't particularly good. I mean, I do remember seeing a movie. I think I watched it because he was in it. He's literally in it for like 5 minutes at the beginning and then bails out. And it's always like, oh, okay. I actually came to watch Tony Todd, but now I got to watch these other people. But yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be a great working actor. You know, he just kind of takes roles and does his best with them. And I think that he's always been a super fascinating watch.
Oh, totally. Like all these B-movie actors, I try to look up some of their works, and sometimes they're just, like, impossible to find. And I mean, when he starts off, he's in movies like Colors and Lean on Me, but they're not even speaking roles. They're just featured, you know, he's got a name and everything. But it's like, yeah. you forget he's in those. I just saw the MacGyver episode he was in, and I totally forgot he was in that. It's just because it's just such a brief beginning role. And, Platoon, he is featured. But yeah. You could easily forget him along with the others because, you know, it's just such a giant casted movie. But I know one that keeps getting brought up on various forums that was like by Empire Pictures is Enemy Territory. It's like this assault on Precinct 13 type film.
Okay.
Where these like all these various just gang members are cornering this insurance salesman and he's like one of the main gang members.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one either. Yeah, he's but yeah,
I think it's on YouTube. So
yeah, he's done so many films, and so many appearances. I actually forgot he was in The Rock until I logged into this Zoom.
Really?
There's somebody with a I had forgotten all about The Rock, even though I love The Rock. But
fucking money.
Yeah, I mean, like it has some wonderful moments like Nick Cage being like, are you a music fan? He's like, I don't, you know, are you Elton John fan? He's like, I don't listen to soft ass shit. And they're like, you know, he's like, well, you're the Rocket Man, and like shoots him out the window.
So much.
Yeah, it's a great moment. And I totally,
the Rocket until Man.
I didn't even think about it until I logged on to this and then saw Jonathan has Tony Todd's photo of him and The Rock in it. And I'm like, oh my God, I totally forgot. Yes, of course, The Rock. I love that movie. And I forgot that he was in it when I was thinking about Tony Todd roles. But yeah.
All good. Danny, what made you decide, hey, you know, this is an actor I'll keep a lookout for whenever he shows up on screen?
Well, you know, just like Nathaniel was saying, the remake of Night of the Living Dead is just a masterpiece. I agree that it's hard to cast aspersions at the first, and I'm not going to do that.
But. Oh, damn. I was guest starring on another podcast talking about it, and like everyone just wanted to dick slap it. I'm like, there are worse movies out there. And I mean, these guys were just like such elitists. It's like, whatever everyone else says, that's the truth. I'm like, that's not how a movie review goes. You cite your opinion.
Which one were they attacking?
Oh, just Night of the Living Dead. Like, just not even giving it a chance. Just acting the
original or the remake?
The remake.
Well, you know, and you get but a lot like of that. Just, I mean, the first one broke so much ground. But, you know, it's a tremendous movie, and a lot of it is because Tony Todd is so intense. I mean, when he punches through that door, and they're going to barricade the house, and they've got, you know, they got those doors upstairs, and the guy's like, oh, this should be good. This should be good. He's like, it's not good enough. And then he says, you know, no, it'll be all right. And he punches his hand through it. He says, not good enough.
Yeah,
I mean, it's so just good, that kind of stuff. He lends this gravitas to all these parts. And, you know, not only can he do that, but he can also be the sage wise, like you said, the voodoo priest or whatever he needs to be. But when I met him, that intensity, you know, leached through. I was kind of scared of him for a minute or two.
Yeah, I met Robert Lissardo, who's been in all kinds of movies, and he was like, if anyone you ever meet at any of these conventions, please have it be Tony Todd. I'm like, sweetest man ever.
Yeah, actually, it's not really my story to tell, but a friend of mine who I used to be on a podcast with her over at Simple Sarah's Horror Menagerie, she apparently met him recently this past summer at a convention, and it was her daughter's birthday, her daughter's like fifth birthday. And apparently Tony Todd sang happy birthday to her.
No.
Nice. Yeah. Apparently supposedly he is like the nicest man. Like she was like, oh, it's my daughter's birthday. And he actually sang happy birthday to her. It's a very sweet story. Apparently he's supposed to be a super nice guy.
I met him at the Nashville Tattoo and Horror Convention, and I was years ago. It was 10 years ago or more. And so I just picked out a Candyman picture for him to sign, and they weren't really doing selfies as much then anyway. And I wanted him to sign it, the line from Wishmaster where he says, you know, name's Johnny Valentine. Remember yes. that name when they ask you how you lost that eye.
Yeah. Oh, and, God. That's and great.
He got kind of mad. He was like, that's not from this movie. I was like, no, it's not from this movie, but I just kind of wanted you to write that. And he was like, oh, okay. And he drew like a picture of an eye, and then he shook my hand. And dude's hand is huge, man. Like his fingers were like as long as my palm and my fingers.
You know? Like I've seen huge. Him use it in like interviews too. I'm like, holy fuck. I mean, is this, yeah. There's no way around it. You are gonna look at his hands because, like, he also just like acts with them, like when he's describing stuff in interviews. Mm. And you're like, I want to be on your level. Where are you going with this? Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he, like you said, he's a super nice guy. But like that intensity really, really shows through. And you know, for a minute there, I thought he was kind of pissed at me for asking for this quote from a different movie. But then I was like, no, I just like the quote. He was like, oh, okay. And yeah. he signed it. He drew a picture of an eye.
I think he was just making sure, because you know how it is. It's like yeah. people mistake stuff all the time, and the last thing they want is just someone just writing an article saying, Tony Todd doesn't remember his movies. What the fuck's going on here? So, John, you are the giant action fan and likes some sci-fi and horror. What are some other highlights for you just seeing Todd's range, deep voice, and just moody characters on either the good or bad side of the law?
Well, for me, it was ones like The Crow.
Right. Yeah, it's hard to forget that he's in it because it's like, but he's like near the end, but, and he just goes apeshit with the machine gun.
Which you love to see every time.
Oh, yeah.
And even like in the ones like Excessive Force. Or
yeah, do you guys do any martial arts movies or strictly horror?
Usually I do. We do pretty much horror. We've done a little bit of we branched out a little bit to some more like science fiction type stuff. We did like Predator, we did Blade Runner.
Okay. Yeah. Excessive Force is just a very fun crooked cop movie starring a martial artist who was big in the 90s. That's also got Lance Henriksen, but it's cool there because they both get a giant ass fight scene, and
which I was surprised when we watched it a few months ago.
He is extremely athletic, and you just wonder if he's just putting a lot of that to use and then just gave it up after a while.
Yeah, that's probably what happened there.
Because yeah, Night of the Living Dead, he is tackling people, and Patricia makes sense. She was a stunt woman, but yeah, it's like Tony. Yeah, what, was he supposed to be a stuntman at one point? And then yeah, there and. A few years afterward, and you're seeing that, and I'm like, man.
Yeah, he had a lot of physicality in a lot of his earlier roles. He's was definitely versatile in that respect. But yeah, I mean, you're right. In the 1990 Night of the Living Dead, he's very physical. He's one of the reasons why I think it's such a seminal role for him is because it is he is balancing like the intensity that Cam had mentioned. You know, like he's able to do those quieter moments with a lot of intensity. Like he has the wonderful variation on the where he just came from monologue, where he like snaps the stick and he's like, you know, you gotta hit him in the head, you know. But he also like has this whole protracted combat sequence where he has to fight his way back to the house, and he's just literally like unarmed and just like doing like a roll. He does like a front roll at one point and trips a guy. He like punches a guy in the head. He's fighting large groups of them off all of this really great physicality. You know, it's that versatility that I think brought into the dance, so to speak. I mean, he just has that ability to both be physically imposing while also being able to kind of bring a quiet moments to it as well. So, I mean, yeah, it's just, he's just a really fantastic actor.
Totally. An earlier role, so he, in the 80s and 90s, and he had guest spots galore in TV movies. When he gets into the 90s, he has like a recurring role in Jake and the Fat Man, so not a procedural role, but I really recommend Voodoo Don, which is just this obscure, just where he plays a Haitian voodoo priest. He's just kind of going on a serial killing spree. And I saw it on Rapid Share years ago in college, and I actually didn't mind it. I thought the cast was pretty decent. It was one of Gina Gershon's first films. And despite it being by, you know, part of the Night of the Living Dead duo, John R. Russo, I actually can say this is one of his better movies, not outside of the Romero factory.
Nice. It sounds like it's worth checking out. I mean,
it's an obscurity, and I'm really surprised it hasn't popped up on any streaming platform like Amazon or Shudder or what like. But yeah, I lost no sleep over it. I'm sure you can find a region-free DVD or VHS at a thrift store, no problem. He's later in one of Dennis Hopper's evil henchmen in this obscure movie called Sunset Heat. It's an okay B-movie escapade, and that was like same year as Candyman. So follow that up with The Crow. I recommend his Law and Order appearance. That's from season 4 when... Oh, totally. That's when you still got Jill Hennessy still joins the cast and everything. He plays an outspoken reverend who wants justice for a hit and run of a dead black kid. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting to see. It's like, yes, there should be justice, but is he going to break the law? It's a cool, suspenseful episode. And furthermore, I'm sure everyone has seen the season 2 episode of The X-Files where he's played a man with who was just... had like just an unusual complexion, and he's like a Vietnam veteran who just projects his mind into other people in order to kill him.
Oh, okay. I don't. I haven't seen the X-Files since I was like in high school. It was really it's one of those blind spots for me. Like a lot of people were like X-Files, and I'm like, you know what? Even as a horror buff, I didn't get into it at the time, and now there's so much of it that I'm like, I would love to start the X-Files, but I have other stuff to do for the next 4 years. You know what I mean?
You can only binge watch so much other stuff.
Yeah,
and that's what got him the roles. You know, Howard Gordon always kept him in the casting call after that. He was one of the writers, producers at that point. And so that's what got him the gigs on 24. And then that's also what got him on stuff like Buffy or Angel. So,
yeah, actually, that's a good one to bring up. I'm a huge fan of the show Angel, and he was on an episode of that.
I would keep bumping into that episode, too. I am not even joking. It's like, it's one of the last few episodes. It's like, who is that guy in giant, like, demon type, you know, makeup? Like,
yeah, it's called The Shroud of Ramon, and he mm-hmm. The movie's actually, interestingly enough, it's the episode is a heist episode of sorts. But he plays like this really like evil, mean, super strong demon that he's giving everybody a hard time. It's a really fun role for him, in full prosthetic makeup and everything. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very fascinating, fun performance from him.
Absolutely. So Todd stays extremely busy with TV. I recommend the Western trilogy of Black Fox movies where he and Christopher Reeve play cowboys. Slow moving but interesting moody western set in 1880s Texas. John might remember him from the Mark Dacascos martial arts film Sabotage, where he plays a very ruthless special forces assassin.
Yep. I remember that clearly.
One of Carrie Ann Moss's first roles pre-Matrix. So.
Oh, yeah. Let's get rid of
it. If it ain't Beastmaster 3, The Eye of Braxis, I don't want to watch.
It's so much fun.
It's a good point, yeah.
He passes so many people's faces in as are allowed in a PG movie. This is like...
Well, you know, it was obviously an attempt to start some kind of... It looks like the pilot of a show. And, you know, I see why it didn't get picked up. But, I mean, Tony Todd... It's hard to fault Tony Todd. You know, he's just working, man. Absolutely. You know, they're not all winners, but he's given it everything. That's
just it. If you're a B-movie actor, I mean, that's just it. Like, I'm cool with that. Just make that clear from the point off, as opposed to, okay, you've seen better days, buddy. And don't get me wrong, some of them are just immortal. We'll always check it out. I will always see a piece of shit that has Stallone or Bruce Willis, because I just can't help myself, Planet Hollywood for the win. But they've had some duds, and you're just like, you just didn't care. Whatever. I'll just erase the memory of that shit fest from my mind.
That's what you have to do.
Yeah, I'm not even sure he even does that. I think he probably still has some sense of pride of everything he's ever worked on. I think it's probably similar to like Christopher Walken.
Oh, Christopher Walken, yeah.
Yeah, where he's that Christopher Walken has always been that guy who's just like, I'll be the best part of any movie, you know, happily. So I think that it's just a working class pride. I think that it's just like he'll take these roles and
you never know where he is on the side of the law. He always has a very complex backstory for whatever he's playing. And
yeah,
I think that's what echoes it. And that's years before he did every other cartoon and video game voiceover. I recommend his season 4 episode of NYPD Blue. He plays just a very manipulative, just petty detective who's basically just like misleading everybody and basically just wants to make them all look petulant. And it's like, nah, the only one petulant here is you, buddy. Well, why are you playing around and jerking us around?
Right.
You're not getting any credibility from this. You're just a shithead. Yeah. And it's so wild because he just looks so humble and everything. And everyone's just like, why is he saying that? That doesn't make sense with the report we got from this witness. Oh, because he wants to waste our time. Look important. Work politics. It's complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just looking at his IMDb page now and seeing stuff I've forgotten all about, like Minotaur.
Made for
sci-fi. Movie, yeah, and he plays like the titular Minotaur.
He had good makeup, but it wasn't as good as the one in the Angel episode. True Women, he played like one of the slaves who was also like protecting the various homestead, and that was cool. That was an all-star cast, including a young Angelina Jolie and Sally Richardson and Dana Delaney. It's a pretty cool historical post-Civil War Western. Does all the various Xena Hercules guest spots. I saw Stir back in the day that had Tracy Lords, so you know it's quality. But no, seriously, it was just an okay watchable mystery movie, but he kind of was the only thing really worth watching about that one. But fun fact about Wishmaster, you know, Alex Kurtzman, when he years later, apparently I watched a YouTube 2013 convention video with him and Andrew DeVos, the djinn who we've actually covered on here, his best roles. And apparently Andrew said, Kurtzman, he actually, you know, went to town at Photoshop one day and made a mock Wishmaster versus Candyman poster.
Yeah.
He would totally be down to do it.
And yeah, he was in Wishmaster along as a sort of a stunt casting thing.
They
brought him in with Kane Hodder and Robert Englund and Reggie Bannister from Phantasm, and it was all just a. And I remember being a kid when that came out, you know, and all the other kids.
You blink twice, you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, all the other kids in my neighborhood were like, it's obviously going to be, he's going to play the Candyman because they're going to have a wish, and like it's going to be like Candyman and Freddy, and I was like, I don't think that's probably gonna happen. Even as a kid, I was like, that sounds like, you know, that doesn't sound like rational to me. But and it was sure if it was not, he just played like he plays a bouncer, right? He gets killed
totally
by the Wishmaster.
The name's Johnny Valentine.
Yeah, he has the threat. Yeah, the only one of those classics that got to actually have like a real part in Wishmaster was Robert Englund.
Yeah, well, and plus he's playing a professor, so you know he's gonna have more than one scene in it. I mean, it's his party that he's crashing, so that makes it all the more awesome. It's like, oh my god, you killed Freddy.
And actually, early on you mentioned Masters of Horror, the Showtime series, but he was in one of the best episodes of that too.
And he plays like a guy named like the Beast, right?
Yeah, he plays the Beast. Beast. In a really wonderful wonderful episode adapted from Clive Barker's story, directed by Mick Garris, I think. And it's a really fun meta episode. I think it's on Tubi. I think that whole show's on Tubi, so I do recommend your listeners
doubt it.
I do recommend that one for your listeners. But a lot of the Masters of Horror aren't that great, but there are some gems in there, and I think Valerie on the Stairs, the name of the episode, I think it's probably the best one of the entire run. It's really quite good.
It was just cool to see Joe Dante still getting work, you know?
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, like, there's a lot of episodes that are worth watching, but like the best ones are, I think, are Valley Around the Stairs. And of course, John Carpenter's Cigarette Burns, which does not have Tony Todd in it, but those two episodes are the two that always come to mind. Tony Todd plays the Beast, who's this creature that is kind of like a tulpa. He's created by a bunch of different writers to terrorize their fictional character, and like he's quite frightening in it, you know, as he always is. So, but yeah, it's a great
role. As scary as he was at the convention.
Well, yeah,
there you go.
That's what he brings to the table.
Literally at the table.
At the table.
I'm not gonna lie, I would give him a giant bear hug.
It would be giant.
I'd be like, you make me take pride in actors, and they're not the ones who win awards. You're the ones who show up and kick ass.
Totally.
Exactly.
So he was in Bram Stoker's Shadow Builder, a B-picture I've always meant to see. I know that had a pretty decent review from a TV guide, so it's not every day that direct-to-video creature feature gets a good review.
Is it true that he got the job as the Candyman because he actually used to eat bees?
I haven't heard that story.
He didn't eat
bees. I know he hated the stings, but he's like, hey, it's made up for the fact that it was a damn good role.
Okay. I did just kind of make that up. But hey, you know, yeah. It would make a good story.
I'm about to say, you ain't going to change
it. No, I actually do believe that what his official stance on it is, he just wasn't afraid of the bees. And they asked him to do all these things, and they were originally going to, I think they were going to get a stand-in to do a lot of it. And he just said, no, I'll do it, because all the bees in Candyman were all half frozen. So they were all
docile.
Yeah. Docile.
Nice.
But also, like, you know, they put, you know, some anti-inflammatory stuff in his mouth, but technically, like, yeah, they did all this work, makeup work, to make him safer. But ultimately, yeah, he completely covered himself in bees and had bees in his mouth and everything in Candyman. He just rolled with it.
Especially with the effects of the time, it meant that you could actually have the headlining guy doing these things. You didn't have to like cut close to the mouth or any of that stuff. It was actually him. Then that's awesome of him to do that work.
Yeah. And then supposedly it was Virginia Madsen who was terrified of bees, and she had to kind of deal with it. But he said,
we'd like to think Hollywood's progressive, but it's just such bullshit how they just wanted to just cut more scenes out. Oh yeah, no, they can't have any interracial relationship. I'm like, that's the whole damn point of the movie, you guys, come on.
she didn't like the bees,
fortunately Roger Ebert told a lot of critics to, you know, get off their ass and, you know, seek it out. So
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that review with Siskel. It's just like, this is a terrible story. It was like, what are you talking about? This is a very philosophical, moody movie. There's a reason for the gore. There's a reason for the suspense. There's a reason for the romance. Siskel is just like, might as well have not even seen the movie.
Well, that's surprising that Ebert ended up liking it, though. Ebert was...
Everyone keeps acting like he hates horror movies. I see a lot of horror movies he likes. He just wasn't into Carpenter's, much like...
Well, Ebert was a bit of a prude with a lot of stuff, but yeah, he wrote
Valley of the Dolls.
Yeah, but yeah, it surprises me that actually of the two of them, that it was Ebert the one that liked Candyman and not Siskel. But
Siskel hated stuff like the Terminator and gangster movies, and Ebert was fine with anything as long as he just got a sense from it. So he liked stuff like the first two Aliens and Gremlins, but. And even Jurassic Park, but like if it was just a mindless slasher, that's when he just would tune out and just be like, what the hell's the point? So I think that's the thing. He would sometimes enjoy a silly, cheesy Friday night movie, but there's other times where it's like, okay, Ebert, you're being way too hard on this.
Yeah.
I know he likes The Thing, so there you go.
That is true.
Yeah. That is true. Yeah.
But he didn't like the Night of the Living Dead remake because he's just like, it's not at all like groundbreaking like the original, so there you go. Enough about Ebert.
Well, I didn't like Hatchet, so
I'm not a Hatchet fan either, to be honest with you.
I have tried to get into the various ones, and everyone seems to vary on them all, and I'm just like, well, either way, Tony Todd, it's like the first title that gets brought up whenever I see him at a convention table. I'm like, why? He's barely in it. He's just a cameo.
Right. It's kind of like Wishmaster, where it's like a, you know, it's a tour of the well-known names of the genre. But I tried to watch it, and I'll be honest, I didn't even get through the first one entirely.
Yeah, I think I watched, I remember I saw the first one and I was just sort of, I was okay with it. I mean, I was like, this is fine. And then they kept making them, and I did see them all, I think. I mean, I think I only saw the sequels because Danielle Harris was in them.
None of those.
Yeah.
Someone else says AJ Cook from Final Destination 2 is in one, but
Danielle Harris, she's in the Hatchet movie. She's in Hatchet 2 and 3.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking Wishmaster.
Oh, no, not Wishmaster. No.
No, Danielle Hatchet. Okay, sorry. My bad.
No. But yeah, no, Hatchet, yeah. He was in the first Hatchet. He didn't, yeah, he was in a small role.
And he like makes an uncredited like cameo in part 4. I'm like, why are you putting this on his resume? Yeah. I saw it and I didn't catch him anywhere. Maybe it's because I was bored, but whatever.
Yeah, he plays like a voodoo guy in it, I believe. Reverend Zombie, I think is what.
Yeah, it's pretty early in the movie too, because I saw it before I gave up on it, and I'm not your target audience for that anyway. So
it is what it is.
I'm not a completionist.
No, I totally get you. Yeah, I mean, like, I know, like, for example, the same thing with the Final Destination films. I was never really a huge fan.
Yeah, they were like Jeepers Creepers, where it's like they're fun on a good day, they're really terrible on a bad day, and sometimes it was half and half. Like, it's like, I love the first half, I hate that ending.
But yeah, part two, just the rest of them, I just could never stay in.
Yeah, part two at least just had like an emotional core at it, and he was spookier there, even though he's only just seen in the morgue. It's just like,
yeah,
the rest of them, like part three, I'm sorry, that I was Saw before it was Saw, and I'm just like, I gotta be like attached to something, or I just gotta have the filmmaker just winking at me saying, don't take this serious, you know. I just need something fun like that. And when it gets to, I mean, don't get me wrong, Todd, as it goes on, and he said it before, I've been in some movies I'm not proud of, he's never named it. It's like, I think it's really only, he's like midway through the 2000s, where before he just starts, you know, appearing in whatever. But I mean, he was in the Murder Set Pieces. I think, wasn't that a remake? No, I'm thinking of something else. But yeah.
Set Pieces?
Yeah, Murder Set Pieces, no relation to Pieces.
And not Pieces.
Not Pieces, that was before his time, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I would have remembered seeing Tony Todd in that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he would have stuck out like a sore thumb in that movie.
Yeah.
Of course, sure. You know. Yeah. Anyway, no.
It continue. He's in this one Hood movie with Caught Out, where he plays the main detective, and it's a schlocky film, but it's kind of fun for those who just remember just how every other movie had to have like a hip hop soundtrack and a guy in the hood trying to escape and as a fugitive. And Jeffrey Combs plays a very bizarre villain in that, so he might be worth it for that. Might, I'm not saying is. He's in the Jim Wynorski cheesy film, The Pandora Project. You should just see it if you're just a Jim Wynorski fan.
I want to see the one Vampire in Vegas that Jim Wynorski directed also.
Oh God, that was hysterical. Just that blade type suit he was wearing the whole time. It's really barely a horror movie, but it is kind of just cheesy just to look at. He's in this movie called Butter, which basically has pre-Criminal Mind Shamar Moore on the run. See a trend here? And he plays, Ernie Hudson plays the evil record executive, and Todd and Tommy Tiny Lister, rest in peace, are his right hands, who basically go out of their way to kill the snitches.
Nice. That actually sounds like a fun cast.
It really is a fun, very fast-paced movie, and I'm surprised at the cast in it. But yeah, it premiered on HBO, and it's one of their better, you know, world premiere movies. So yeah, it just goes through the list, just nonstop guest spots: Smallville, Crossing Jordan. I remember those. Control Factor, I thought, was a cool virtual reality movie. Even though it was premiered on Sci-Fi Channel, it was just very taut. And it was just so cool to just see him with glasses, just being just a scientific exposition instead of just, you know, being wasted. Scarecrow, right. Slayer, I remember that was like the photo that was like on his IMDb for the longest time. Like, what is that photo from? Oh, it's from this Asylum film called Scarecrow Slayer. I saw it a few years back and I was just, I could not stop laughing at it. He has to kill this killer scarecrow with a batch of dynamite. Totally worth
that's,
it.
That's the whole thing?
Well, that's the only whole part of it. The rest of it is just weird grunge rock music and a bunch of stupid teens getting high and eating pizza. So I'm... For a stupid horror movie, it was worth it. I saw it free on YouTube. Do it when you just need something stupid to make fun of. I dug him in the Final Prophecy movie, even though that wasn't one of the best sequels. John might like him in Dark Assassin, which is a fun martial arts film. Okay. This guy, Jason Yee, was like hot for a hot second there and then just disappeared. But it was cool to see a guy just try and do... on a micro budget, a Bruce Lee type tribute movie. Tony is really freaky in that one season one episode of Criminal Minds, and he's not even the main serial killer in that episode. He's just the prisoner who's like giving them some advice on how to catch this guy, and he's like, man, why wasn't he the main bad guy of the episode? But it didn't feel wasted. He was still very intimidating to where it's like they're having trouble just even getting a straight answer from him because they're just so scared to go in the room and sit down with him, even with an armored guard. And so then there was this independent film called Heart of the Beholder, which is talking about the religious right trying to, it was a true story, trying to silence controversial movies known only as The Last Temptation of Christ. So it's a cool docudrama movie. Made on a very low budget with an all-star cast. And he has a cameo as Chuck Berry. That's right, the musician.
He plays Chuck Berry in a documentary about the religious right trying to silence The Last Movies. Temptation of Christ.
Yeah.
That can't be right.
That's actually really? A movie. What is the name of this movie?
It's called Heart of the Beholder.
Heart of the Beholder.
He co-stars okay. in it with Michael Dorn. That's right. Or from Star Trek. So. Brothers reunite.
I just like to thank you for educating me. It feels like a wider world now. I like Tony Todd, but I feel like I've only seen the tip of the iceberg of what he has to offer and maybe not offer, but I'll have to find out.
Hey, he makes every movie for me worth watching. I saw him as an intimidating gangster in Turntable. This is a very hard to track down movie. I might have to just give my copy to someone or just upload it to YouTube. It's so hard to find. I thought it was pretty cool. I didn't like how I paid $20 for this fucker, but it is what it is. I liked how he was very suspenseful. They kept hinting at him and then he showed up, but it's a typical Reservoir Dogs type knockoff movie with some cool Law and Order type actors and some hip hop playing. So, as Lord Hyken on Stargate, he was pretty damn cool on there. He got to play opposite of the cigarette-smoking man for that season, season 7. Shadow Dead Riot, I see, is, you know, where he's a voodoo-practicing serial killer, and the title character has often been, like, re-released a few different times. It's like a cult movie. It's like Evil Dead in a prison, basically.
Yeah, I looked that one up after you mentioned it. He's got those dreadlocks and he looks like he's got fangs.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Lots of fun. And get this. I once was talking to some other guys who had made some trashy direct-to-video movies and they were like, oh, I hate it. I was so tempted for a minute to say, well, it's better than your, you know, zero-star piece of shit movie, but I didn't. I didn't want to instigate a fight with those pricks. So he worked with John Carl Boogler quite a lot. He was in this like Eden formula, which was like a continuation of Roger Corman's Carnosaur shitfest. But I definitely can recommend The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Just a giant ass all-star cast. Tim Thomerson from Trancers is in it. Deborah Shelton, Peter Jason from Return of the Living Dead 3. It's a pretty fun retake and I like how they just made it more modern and the makeup was really damn good. And I couldn't stand Vernon Wells, you know, from Mad Max 2 and Commando. He just seemed like they just needed him to just be thrown in there just for the sake of just putting a name on the cover. It was like, how can you cast a good actor and just put him in this stupid ass role? But it is what it is. Reunites him with Babylon 5 co-star Tracy Scoggins. So she does a good job as the detective.
You know what you're getting with Vernon Wells, though.
Like, oh, yeah. I'm getting Vernon Wells, but...
He's going to scream at the camera. He's going to fight somebody. He's got big square teeth.
Mm-hmm. So then he was in Chicago Massacre, the story of Richard Speck. This was an interestingly filmed yet very confusing real-life true crime serial killer movie for me. The tone was there, but I was just like just so confused. And apparently a lot of people were who knew about the actual crime case really didn't like it because it was very loose with the so-called facts. And so in this, Tony Todd plays a captain who basically does a dick measuring contest with another detective played by his Wishmaster co-star, Andrew Devoff. I found it watchable. I didn't think it was a piece of shit, but it was very confusing. And then around the 2000s, he stars in Shadow Puppets, which co-stars opposite of Buffy stars James Marsters and Star Trek Enterprise babe Jolene Blaylock. I actually thought this was a very cool psychological, you know, thriller. Just yeah, like with Cube, just a yeah, bunch of these guys in a claustrophobic space just wake up and they're like, what the hell's going on? Who are you? Where are we? What are we doing here?
Yeah, I haven't seen that one in years. I do remember thinking it was not bad, though. It was just a long...
Oh, yeah, it had like an abysmal rating and I just saw it for free on Hulu. I'm like, this is very Todd. You know, this is very respectable.
Yeah.
So then he's on The Man from Earth, which is kind of an underground kind of sci-fi mystery movie. Like they already just came out with a sequel to it. It's just like one of those independent movies everyone's kind of heard of and just kind of just word of mouth. Like it just slowly keeps like getting rediscovered on the streaming channels. It's wild. I was like, man, I thought I was the only guy who knew about it. And the script was by Jerome Bixley, who was best known for writing a lot of classic Twilight Zone and Star Trek episodes. So... It's like a hard, hard sci-fi made on a low budget, but still looks great. And it's got a great rating, too, like 7.9 on IMDb. So then he's in the prison film, The Mansfield 12. Totally recommend. I Murders, which was an unusual serial killer movie. There's a bunch of others I haven't seen. But I totally recommend his turn on 24. That's just, everyone should see that. Gory, psychological, violent show. But I mean, as that terrorist who takes over the White House, like he just changed it all up. He just had to just really just, and that's what that show needed at that point. There was just so many villains by the dozens, just oversaturated. And when he was on there, he just flat out just killed it. Just like, yeah, this guy's not playing around. Already five different, you know, White House attendants have been capped in the head, and he is just, you know, storming in there, and he's like, Madam President, you are going to be executed. You know, it's just, there's no way around this. So you can read the damn thing, or I can force you to read it, you know, or I can shoot your daughter, and this will go a lot quicker, you know?
It's that intensity.
Intensity. We should say that in Tony Todd's voice. Intensity.
if I could, I would.
I would. So then he was in the second Transformers, and I will just say he was the best part about it as being Tyler Allen.
I would say the same thing, too.
Yeah. Have any of you seen his appearance on Psych?
I think I remember his episode.
It was in season 4, and he just plays this detective who's just looking creepy at Gus and Sean, and they're like, ah! The whole entire time. And it's just, and it just at the end is like, oh. You guys, I was just waiting for you guys to just stick around and just lead me to the serial killer. Thanks. I'm going to arrest him now. This whole time, you just think he's stalking them or something, or just like a sleazy private eye. And it's like, no. And then he just comes up and he just shows off his guns and everything. He's like, yeah.
How's it going? Nice.
So then he's in just a bunch of other like horror anthology shows made for the internet and cable TV, which are fun. I definitely recommend that indie film he did called The Graves, where these two sisters are in a random mine. It's just kind of a fun throwback to a lot of those just running away from the cannibals and everything.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that he was in that. That was Brian Polito, I believe.
Yeah, it got like
the creator of Lady Death, the old comic book from the Dark Horse stuff back from the 90s.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was a highlight because it was kind of one of those. It was bought by After Dark Films, and I know After Dark Films was one of those. It was kind of like Masters of Horror, where it was ambitious, but it didn't really kind of just land. Kind of just exited stage right with little fanfare. But I thought that was a lot of fun while watching it at work one night.
Yeah.
And how ironic. I think he gets like stung to death by bees, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh,
yeah. The color being some kind of homage. And I was just like, man, he's getting a really gory death on screen. So then he's briefly on a bunch of other shows. I really thought he was pretty cool on the show Chuck. That was just a fun spy comedy altogether. But I mean, this is where I then start having trouble like keeping up with any of his movies, because a lot of them just never got released, like other than like festivals or something. I was just like, where can I buy this? Oh, I can't. Like, there's the Jack the Reaper movie, and I'm like, I can't ever buy that anywhere. It's got a kick-ass poster. He's playing a priest on the poster, so I'm like, yeah, I would like to watch this, but I can't find it anywhere.
I see that. In 2011, he plays Mr. Steel.
Mr. Steel.
How about he punches Steel through a door?
I hope he punched. Or better yet, how about he punched like a serial killer in the face and his head explodes scanner style or some shit?
Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
That would be amazing. So I saw him in that movie with Mark Hansen and Michael Berryman and Kane Hodder called The Family, and I thought that was okay, even though the lighting was pretty bad. But he's in this other hood movie called Falling Away, and it's a really actually pretty deep movie, and I was really confused by it at first because there's a PG-13 rating on the cover and there's like constant pervasive language, so I'm like, yeah, this is R-rated. It's not, it's realistic, like in a way like The Wire, but it's not not for kids, not for teens. But this was really cool. He basically just was a man who just caused an accident for a school bus that killed a bunch of kids. And he's just literally just, you can just tell Tony's heart is in this one because he seems like a very passionate man, you know, in interviews. And here he's basically playing a guy just having a coming to Jesus moment. He's just like, I can't live with myself. I did a shitty thing. And he does pretty much just a lot of stretching out in front of the mirror and just looking at himself, but it's a pretty fast-paced crime movie. He does that the same year as this other movie called Changing the Game. I watched pretty much anything that's on the boob tube, and this was a fun, another fun hood film. He plays a very demented, disfigured gang member and also has like a double role as an FBI agent. So same year, he's also in Sushi Girl. He's the, again, not a Reservoir Dogs type, Pulp Fiction type movie. And he's later in the Call of Duty Black Ops series. And that was cool because he actually got to do the motion capture. You can actually find videos of that online. It's just awesome seeing actors just interact and, you know, what's being recreated on screen is actually them. So I saw Dead of the Night. This was another... This involves the Jericho Manor. This is another movie that got like just shit upon, but I thought was watchable. He was at least the reason I watched it. So, did any of you see Dust of War or Army of the Dam?
I did not see those.
So, Dust of War is a fun apocalyptic movie. Army of the Dam, basically, these idiots are filming a reality show in a supposedly haunted house, and he's basically the zombie cleanup squad who doesn't believe there's actual zombies, but of course everyone gets slaughtered. It's
I think that was the one I was mentioning earlier that I think I watched, that I was like, I watched it for him and he wasn't really in it much.
He wasn't in it much, yeah, but I thought he was just so good. Yeah. As much as I'm not a Backstreet Boys fan, I was just finding it just so fun just catching, I mean, Solely Erna from Godsmack stars in this, you know, so I just, and Michael Berryman makes a cameo, and there's these other wrestler divas who are playing parts of the SWAT team. It just felt like they were actually just having fun, but not too much fun, to where it's like, hey, yeah, sure, you had fun, but, you know, there's nothing here. I just was like, okay, so whoever's doing the lighting for this should quit their day job, but at least this is still very well framed and energetic, and everyone seems to have a fun time before you get to all, you know, what you paid to see, which is zombie slaughtering, you know. So, and yeah,
so does he come in at the end or like in the middle somewhere?
Both kind of.
Okay.
Then he's in this other movie called Vanish with Danny Trejo. It's just another weird, just kidnapping drama. And he's reunited with his Candyman director, Bernard Rose, on a 2015 version of Frankenstein. And this has been playing on a lot of the AMC Shudder channels and even IMDb TV lately. I had the DVD, so it was another one where I kind of enjoyed the commentary track and the special features more than the actual movie, but it was worth watching despite being slow as fuck. But he has a good role as a blind guitar musician. I just wish they had kind of just, I don't know. Frankenstein's monster just doesn't get much persona. And I get that's kind of where they're going, but I just would have liked to see a little more. But maybe that's just me. So then he's just starring in just like endless, you know, B, D-list movies. Saw Agoraphobia. He's barely in that. Skip that one. And Live Evil was okay. Scream at the Devil was watchable, but not good. Death House is another one that everyone's bitching about, and I definitely can't defend that one. Zombies from 2017, I thought was okay, but hardly memorable. It was kind of wasted in the Depp Collector. I'm sure, John, you saw that. Yeah, he
probably wasted in that.
I was like, he's the main gangster, again, you're hinting at, and you only give him one scene?
Yep, only one scene.
He gets a lot to do, but I mean, even our pal, the friend of the show, Matt Poirier, the director of Video Connoisseur, was like, yeah, this is falling victim to too much just pacing and stretching it. And then he's really briefly seen in Hellfest, which is like a total 80s slasher, you know, the horror-themed amusement park movie.
Yeah, he has a cameo in that. Yeah.
I was like, when is he going to show up? Oh, there he is. This movie just got better.
Yeah, he has a pretty memorable scene at the very least. But yeah, he's only in it for a couple minutes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Reunites with Lance Henriksen in the horror western where they basically play these like ghosts of like infamous outlaws on a train. I really tried to give this, you know, its all, but it's just so slow, and it had it down to a T. The script was there, the budget wasn't. So he gets a cameo in The Final Wish, which is kind of a Wishmaster-esque slow burn movie that he actually said he enjoyed. He recommended the movie as well, and he liked working with Lin Shaye, even though they're not even in the same scenes together, but she's in it. Then he gets to play Zoom in the Flash TV show.
I think just the voice. I don't,
yep.
Yeah,
he just the voice. Actually,
yeah, he just does the voice of the character. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Plays a detective in the Scream TV show. He's kind of barely in Candy Corn. And then he's plays a real life black senator, Benjamin Burke, in the Western Badland. Now he's back to just doing more, just movies that haven't yet come out yet, or as well as one of the Half-Life video games. And just, again, did any of you see Sky Sharks by chance?
No, I don't think I've gotten around to that one.
It's like a deliberate, like, it just, it's, I can see why people were calling it like the Expendables of like horror parodies. It's just like, it was like in the can for like so long. Like, it was like completed in 2017, finally just got released in 2020, and I was it's not like Sharknado, it's more just, again, just an outrageous just get together. I think you guys are just gonna be just guffawing at it like in a Bruce Campbell way. It is just outrageous and just in on it. I thought Tales from the Hood 3 was way better than part 2, and
it was.
Last thing I saw him in, looking at my IMDb ratings, was Insight, a kung fu movie, and The Lockdown Hauntings, which was pretty boring. So yeah, other stuff has just been lately, like another makeup role for the Orville and voiceover for the Netflix He-Man cartoon. So he really can't do any wrong. Like, he's just immortalized. So I'm going to let you guys all plug your shows. Nathaniel, what are you going to be tackling next?
Sure. Like I said, I do At the Devil's Ball. We're on Twitter at film. That's my Twitter account. At the Devil's Ball is at devils_AT. Our next up, I think we're going to be covering Big Trouble in Little China as part of our current theme this month in January, which is just sort of like my co-host named it Comic Sans Comics. And it's sort of like we just did the Wraith. And then we talked to Greg DeLiso about his trauma film, Hectic Knife. So next is Big Trouble in Little China. And then we're not really sure what the fourth one is. We're thinking Dark Man. We talk about horror movies and horror adjacent films in a positive and constructive manner. And hope people check it out.
Stellar. Danny, what can we expect on Legion Podcast Network?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, we're on my co-host and I, Rick Morgan, are on the Hail Ming Power Hour. We're on the Legion Podcast Network. We do mainly movies that the two of us have watched and have a love for. You know, the 70s and 80s films of our youth, and you know, new ones. We just did Prisoners of the Ghost Land not long ago, just because somebody has to talk about that stuff. I have a lot of Tony Todd in my future. I mean, I'm going to be honest, I love him, and I was excited to talk about him, but there's a lot of work here, and I need to give it some real study, and I appreciate you bringing that to my attention.
Oh, it was fun. It was just like with Danny Trejo, is like where it's like just queue up, decide or buy up a bunch of shit on Amazon or eBay, or just get the 1-2 free movies going and just go through them. You can go through them in a day. It's like pass, made it through 20 minutes, or saw the whole thing, worth it or not worth it, or good but he wasn't well used in it, you know.
right on. Yeah, so I mean, just give us a shot. Like I said, I'm excited to hear you're doing Big Trouble in Little China, and it's one of our favorites too. Yeah. We almost called our podcast Six Demon Bag, but that was already done like three times over or something.
Oh, yeah, probably absolutely. Cover it when the inevitable sequel / reboot comes out. And it's like, yeah.
So, yeah, right. Bennett, what is the name of your podcast? Where do we find it? Is it on Twitter? Or
It's the Hail Ming Power Hour, and it is on Legion Podcasts.
Okay. Yeah, you go to there's two different Legion Podcast Network things, especially on Podbean, and, you know, his show will pop up, you know. So
Hail Ming.
Yeah, that's right. Like a Hail Ming from Flash Gordon.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. And
Ricky
also,
Ricky Morgan is one hell of a dude.
Yeah, Ricky Morgan is a powerhouse, and I just kind of suck off of his battery. Oh, that doesn't sound good. I just kind of utilize his motivation. I'll just say that.
I think I know what you mean. Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. Okay. Just your mother with that mouth. So yeah, Ricky was on with John and I when we did we tackled the Sam Raimi episode, and we were like, this guy reinvented three different kinds of cinema: horror comedies, superhero movies, and then just unusual dramas. He's such a one hell of a guy.
Very true.
Just
very
like true. Ricky. Very so true. But it was so fun because like it was one hell of an episode to actually prep for, because it's like I had people from like so many different circles, who like some who were really into Evil Dead but hadn't really seen anything else he had done, and others who were like, we like Spider-Man but don't really like, you know, superhero movies in general. So it was like I didn't know what I was gonna get. I was like, okay, I have to play referee, this is not good. I'm gonna have an actual conversation here. So it was really good. It was just one of those it was hell to prepare for.
Yeah, right on.
So John, what are you reviewing next for the movie or the Action Elite?
Oh, it's a possibility I might review the new screen that's coming out soon.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
That should be interesting.
Yeah, it looks good.
That's all I have on my plate right now.
That's a lot. Yeah. That'll be, I'm sure that'll be, I'm sure that'll be a pretty interesting film. So I think there'll probably be a lot to talk about there.
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
It's my favorite franchise, so I'll see how that holds up against the other ones.
Totally. I just recently caught that they were all available on some streaming service I had, and I'd been turned off by part two, but I went ahead and watched 3 and 4, and they're actually way better than I thought they were going to be.
I love 3 and 4. I think that's particularly 4. That's my favorite sequel of all of them.
It's really good.
Yeah, and I was even really surprised. We had other people on here who were just like, "Ah, I hate part 4." I'm like, "Really? Out of all of you guys, I would have thought you would have totally been in that wheelhouse for Wes Craven." But yeah, it is interesting just getting into that one, because you know, some people like Scream just because of the comedy in it, other people like it just because, again, you know, they're slasher completists, and other people just like it because they do like how it revitalized the genre and everything. And
yep,
it's just one of them hell of a franchise to sum up, because it just was one of those, it's just very inspirational, and yet just so many studios were just ripping it off, and it just got very annoying. Just satire is hard.
True.
Yeah, very true.
So yeah, I guess it seems like the new Candyman didn't really take off as much as it really did. I still have yet to see it, but I had many pals who thought it was a lot of fun, but it was hard to gauge whether they just are easily entertained or really, really dug in. And then I had others who were just like, "Hey, pass." Not awful, but wasted my time. And I was like, interesting. And I just thought it was interesting just how Tony Todd just kind of came back into the spotlight for that, you know, and just for such a signature role. And he's making a appearance in there again. And it kind of was wild how he had to be used on social media for that. They're like, "Oh, I'm not seeing if Tony Todd doesn't come back." And they're like, "Well, Tony Todd is coming back, but he hasn't signed on yet."
He isn't in it much. It's taking the story in a whole different direction. And it has its moments. I didn't think too much of it, but that had nothing to do with the amount of Tony Todd. But yeah, it was an okay film.
As we know, the world needs more Tony Todd.
That is true.
Of course.
Give us more Tony Todd. give me.
We'll return after these messages.
JURRS Podcast is proud to promote AutoCorrect, an independent film company with experienced industry professionals who can serve all your film industry needs. They include self-tapes, voice actor recordings, demo reel editing, script revisions, headshots, and much more. Their actor correct at your request. Book them on Instagram.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, tin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest defenses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll, yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was going to be a rough
movie. How did you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach, and we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
Greetings, friends. My name is Dean Legiro, and I'm the host of the 3324 Podcast. I invite you to join me and my lifelong friend Eric Huber to come with us as we discuss the music and movies that shaped our life. Each week, we'll pick an album or film that we really connect to, and not only give you some great info and trivia, but also discuss, debate, and celebrate what it means to us and the journey it took us on. We also look forward to hearing from you and giving us some of your picks for us to check out and discuss. I think it'll be a really fun experience, so come along with us for the ride. You can find us on your favorite podcast provider, and at 3324.buzzsprout.com. Thanks for your time, and welcome to the 3324 family.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones, too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh, yeah.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-liner plot, holes and gratuitous movies, it's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.